kept all these things in her heart. One of the things that I certainly became fascinated with was the use of motion pictures and especially the background of motion pictures. And when I began to study the motion picture industry and basically the companies that run the motion picture industry and where it takes its foundation and especially the Catholic influence in the early parts of the motion picture industry, it was a very interesting topic for me because as you get to see the industry as a whole, you got to see its great influence of motion pictures on people's lives, their morals, their all the things that they did in their life. Where I come in from in this talk is the idea of motion pictures not only being a, like most of us think, a means of entertainment, but as our Holy Father, the Pope Pius XII, in his encyclical Mirando Prosus, reminds us of the fact in this idea that motion pictures and use of motion pictures is not simply a entertainment. It is, in very effect, a school. Now, the encyclical Mirando Prosus was published in 1957.
And the Holy Father wrote this, and this is be sort of the theme that I carry when I'm talking about motion pictures. This is number 54. It may also be pointed out that besides publishing news and imparting instruction, these new means of communication can contribute greatly to man's true good. So an example of this obviously would be the movie The Passion of the Christ, which I think in general in society did a lot of good for people. There would be the movie Therese. I think that movie is a very good movie in the sense of people were inspired to imitate her life in the little way. So we see the various ways that movies, motion pictures have. But very frequently, shows have this characteristic to some extent that they are meant not only to amuse and inform the audience, but also to train their minds. Thus, our predecessor of happy memory, Pope Pius XI, rightly and properly called motion picture theaters schools. And this is where I'm going to carry this thought with the schools. For they can be called schools in this sense, that the dramatic action is presented in scenes in which vivid pictures created by moving light are synchronized with voices and music in a fascinating way. So they reach not simply the intelligence but and the other faculties, but the whole man, and unite himself to themselves, and almost force him to take part in the plot. An example of this is that in a few years ago, there was the movie The Matrix. And those, I did get to watch that film in what was considered clean films. And when you watch that movie, unless you were very careful about the things that came out in the movie, you naturally had compassion for the hero of the movie. And you wanted the hero, which at that time was Neo, to win in the battle against evil. But when you got to see the plot, what they were doing is they were applying Gnosticism, which would be sort of like good God, bad God type of philosophy. And you got to see rather that the scriptures, because they used a lot of scriptural reference in that movie, you got to see that the scriptural reference of that was actually Neo, was actually the bad guy, and Agent Smith was Christ. The architect was God, obviously. So in other words, the movie had turned around completely the biblical story of creation, the biblical story of redemption, and that Neo was actually the Antichrist. But because if you get into the film naturally, because we're drawn into a film, we naturally feel compassion, or we want the hero to win. But in actuality, in this movie, the hero was the bad guy, and the ones that he was fighting against were the good guys. So we see this. Now, one of the things that I began to study was the motion picture industry of America. And this organization was basically founded about 1922 when motion pictures came into effect. Later on, it took on the name of Motion Picture Industry of America. And then in more recent times, they united themselves with the Music and Film Industry Association of America. So I think it's like Mafia. I think it's what's the name of it now. So they took a new name. So I guess they would be considered a mafia in one sense. But They took the new name of this Motion Picture Association of America, but I'm going to, when I refer to it, I'm just going to just say the MPAA. The history of it is in 1968 when this was one of the first presidents who with the longest tenure was a gentleman by the name of Jack Valenti. And Jack Valenti, the reason he plays into this when I began to study this was the influence of government upon movies, because movies have a great influence over people. And naturally, if you can grab this tool, you can change a whole nation overnight and the whole culture overnight. But when I began to look at the various studies of this and begin to read into it, I got this picture. I'm sure most of you that are about my age, 50 or so, remember this picture of Kennedy. Remember the assassination of President Kennedy? And he was on, and after the assassination, he was, you know, he was declared deceased. He died by his wounds. And then they had to go inaugurate a new president in Air Force One. And you had right here Jackie Kennedy. You had Lyndon Johnson and then Lady Bird Johnson. And then right in this corner right here is Jack Valenti, who was the head of the motion picture industry of America. And obviously you get to the point where you think, wow, wait a minute, you know, that means that the higher ups in regards to changing our culture actually come from this idea that it's not a small thing that the government considers, that they would have one of their own men. Because remember, if you're on Air Force One, you have to have security clearances. You have to, everybody has to know who you are before you get on the plane. And so when I looked at that, I go, my goodness, you know, they have their own man in Washington. But what happened was Jack Valenti was head of the motion picture industry of America from 1968 to 2004. So he had a long tenure. The image that they wanted to portray in the motion picture industry was they wanted to portray themselves as the protector of America's morals. Because remember, up until in the 1950s, up until like John the 23rd and Paul the 6th, the Catholic Church had a voice in regards to what was produced in theaters. If the Catholic bishops of the United States objected over a certain film, the studios were very cognizant of the fact that they didn't want the bishops to down-talk their movie, because obviously Catholics would not go to that movie. So what happened, obviously, with this situation was that by removing the Legions of Decency and having this motion picture industry become rate the movies, you took basically the Catholic voice out of rating movies and certainly protecting a person's morals in regards to use of lust of the flesh or language. That by the use of this, when Vatican II came out, it sort of didn't, there was not like a definite date that it actually ended the Legion of Decency. It just sort of faded away, and this new group, the Motion Picture Industry of America, started their own raiders. And what I mean by raters, people that rate, and I'm not talking about raiders in the sense of, that rate the movies. So I'm just talking about people that rate the various movies, and we call them raters. So the idea here, now the strange thing about the motion picture industry in regards to its rating system is that no one knows who the raters are. It is a secret. Most of us are under the impression that it's family, members of families, or people that are good individuals. We don't know if they're Catholics, if they're Buddhists, if they're Protestants, whatever they might be. We are not, and those in the public are not aware of this situation in regards to who rates the movies. Now, of all the various theaters or the studios, there are the studios, which is Walt Disney is one studio, Columbia, Paramount, 20th Century Fox, Universal, Warner Brothers, MGM, and Sony are the big studios that produce 95% of all the movies that are in the United States. In order, though, to have a movie come out in the theater, it has to go through the motion picture industry of America to have a rating. Otherwise, it cannot go into the theaters. So they yield very great power over the use of what you watch. And the same thing with these studios, Walt Disney, they have various parent corporations. So they also not only run the movies, They also run 95% of the news media, which would be Fox News, CNN. You think most of the time you're getting your news and it's free and or fair and balanced, as some people say. And it's actually run by these same corporations, just different parent corporations. So almost, for the most part, I think as Americans, and we could say 95% of our movies come from these studios, and 95% of our news comes from these studios as well, because, like I mentioned, the news outlets that it is. Now, when the rating system came out in that time, there was, the rating system came out, the system goes as follows. We have G for general, which would be no lust, no unclean, no nudity, no drugs in the use of general, so G rating would have that. We have the parental guidance, which is PG, which you are allowed to have some strong language, S words, that you could show your derriere, I think, one time. You have PG-13, where you're allowed to use the S word. And if you're a PG, if you want to make a PG-13 that gets a PG-13 rating, you can only say F-word one time. You can't say it more. If you say word F-word two times, it goes into R. So studios are very cognizant of the fact that when they make a movie, they put that word in there. They have to be gratuitous about it because they want to make sure they pick their place where they say this word. Obviously, as parents and as Catholics, we do not want our children to hear that word anytime. So that's the idea. And then obviously with our rating, we're talking about reproduction and baby making and lust and aberrational behavior and fornication. And so we have the rating systems that come that way. Now, Jack Valenti, with his tenure that he had, the long tenure that he had at the motion picture industry of America, he yielded a lot of power, especially in Washington, and especially with regards to the laws that we consider the laws of the motion picture industry is very much against the pirating. And I when I explain it to the kids, obviously I think most of you know what pirating is. It's making copies illegally for selling. You make a copy and you got a DVD burner and you burn that copy and you're able to sell them. And so the motion picture industry influenced Congress to make a lot of laws in this regard. And I'll write some of these laws just for the sake of reminding ourselves on this. So the first one of these laws it is the Copyright Term Extension Act. So copyright The Copyright Term Extension Act is a law from Congress. If you maybe perhaps become or own a bakery store and you make a birthday cake with Mickey Mouse on it and you do not pay Disney its royalties, you could go to jail for 5 years and pay a $150,000 fine for just not giving Disney its royalties. So you get here, this is 5 years of jail and $150,000 in fines in against you. We have the second law that was made by the influence of the MPAA is No Electronic Theft Act. So we got the no here, one, two, No Electronic Theft Act. This law is that if you have your computer, and a lot of people do this now with computers, they go to BitTorrent and various websites that are able to download movies. If somehow your computer is confiscated by the police and you have perhaps a file folder with the movie Mummy on it on your computer, you could go to jail for 3 years. And you will also pay a fine of $350,000. So you will be fined quite a bit. And then we have finally the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Now, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and that's a long word, so I'm not going to write it. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act means that in the laws was passed that on many of our computers, we have software like Nero or we have Roxio, I think various burning software that able to burn copies of, like, for instance, CDs. If you like your music, say, for instance, you have a CD, The Sound of Music, and it's the soundtrack. And according to that, you can burn your own copy of music. And as Catholics, we're allowed to burn, make a copy of our music if we want to protect it, because sometimes CDs get scratched and you want to have that. But it is against the law even to make software that allows you to copy DVDs. It is against the law to copy a DVD. And not only that, if you're perhaps a software engineer of some sort, and you know how to rip the DVD and then how to compress it and then reburn it and then put it on. If you do that, if you make the software, sell the software, then they should make a backup copy. You can go to jail for 5 years and pay $500,000 fine just for making the software. So we see when I began to study this idea of the great influence that the motion picture industry had, I got to see how is an organization like this able to wield such power in Congress. And I know this is a silly thing, but we talk about our congressmen, we think they're over in Washington working and making laws for us. But there is a theater that is for the congressmen and for the senators, and they get to watch the movies before you get to watch the movies. So the MPAA has a theater. They are able to have the senators come over, and if they have a law that they wish to be passed, obviously senators will sit there and get a flyer. We like to pass this new law, and we'd like you to do this. And they get the whole works. They get popcorn and sodas, and able to go to the movies for free as long as they are a senator or a representative. And this is a service provided by the MPAA in order to increase either more control or more agenda or go after people that pirate and various things. So when I was looking at this, I got to see the very great control they have, especially over who makes the movies, how they are made, and how it influences. Now, many of you probably remember, I think we had, maybe some of you were part of it, but there was an organization a few years ago called Clean Films. And because it's a Mormon group, there was now, as I mentioned earlier, that there's no more Catholic voice in regards to the use of motion pictures. It's now these Mormons that are trying to show movies to them. There was Clean Films. And what Clean Films did, when I read the history of Clean Films, and I used to be a subscriber to Clean Films, was that they would get the pictures or the movies that were released by the MPAA, and they would even clean it further. They took all F words and any kind of bad words, anything out of it, any kind of immodesty was taken out. And what the MPAA did was they took them to court. And when you got to read the court proceedings on the use of Clean Films, what they basically said is that the studios or the directors didn't like what Clean Films was doing. Now, remember, the complaint that the MPAA has is that of piracy. They didn't want some company to make one of their copies and make 100 copies out of one. So what Clean Films did in order to offset that, for every copy they sent out to the public, say, for instance, the movie Sound of Music, and something like that, if they had one copy they sent out, they had one copy at home. So they would get their people that would edit the movies, they would get clean it all out, and if they had 100 that they sent out, they had 100 at home. So that they would, the motion picture industry would not be able to say, hey, you're just pirating. You're just sort of copying us, and we're not making the money out of the DVDs that you're renting out or selling. And so what they did was they basically, the Clean Films Corporation fought on that, the idea that we're not cheating the motion picture industry of anything. But when you came down to it, basically the idea was that in America, just like our Holy Father said, that they wanted control of the school. Jack Valenti, in all essence, was the principal of that school. And when you watch a film, you are, in every effect, and you're what your kids watch, are going to school. Because if you allow your children to listen to bad language, to listen or watch sins of the flesh, fornication, everything, then you yourself, because of being parents, have taught them about this. So you cannot in any possible way take the blame away from yourself for watching this. And so this is a very important for us in this regard, what that the MPA saw it as a duty to make sure that they were the only ones that were in charge of the school in regards to what America watches, because I think at the peak, Clean Films is almost close to about 50,000 subscribers, and they were sort of like Netflix, you know, where you send in your videos and you get two, and then you send them back and you go on the internet and tell which one you want. It was sort of like the Netflix thing. I see some of you have heard of Netflix. You mail in your DVD and you get a DVD back and you pay the monthly dues and everything. So they were up and up on everything they should do, but we saw that this idea of the movies or the school was very important to them. Now, as a corollary, obviously, to movies of today, it's very important for us to know that when I started studying this idea of movies, one of the movies or one of the aspects that has taken control of America is especially in the use of pornography. And when I started to study the idea of the motion picture industry and the offshoots of it, like in the case of Fox, all these corporations that make the supposedly good movies are the same corporations that obviously make the bad movies, because they're able to fund their individual and their people with all these things. Now, the stats on pornography is that in regards to motion pictures worldwide, pornography makes about $57 billion in regards to sales. The United States itself produces about $12 billion of that. There are 150 new pornography titles every week that come out of, those of you that know that San Fernando Valley is the pornography capital of the world in Simi Valley. They produce more, almost the entire genre of pornographic movies here in the United States. Pornography makes more than baseball, football, basketball combined. More than all the revenues of ABC, CBS, NBC combined. They outmatch them as regards to money. There are about 68 million daily search engines requests in regards to pornography. 60% of all websites, I mean, I have a lot of stats, so I have to pick out which stats I was going to read to you. 60% of all websites are sexual in nature. The average age of the first internet exposure to pornography is 11 years old. The 12 to 17 group is the largest consumer of internet pornography. 53% of promise keepers. Now, remember, promise keepers are those individuals that come in stadiums and they promise they're going to love the Lord Jesus and obey his laws. The stat on this one is 53% of promise keepers viewed porn within 1 week of a stadium conference. So we see that it is a very big problem in America, the use of motion pictures. 47% of Christians say porn is a major problem in the home, and that 44% of U.S. workers with an internet connection admitted to accessing an R-rated website at work in March of 2004. So as you start to look at the various aspects of this, the motion picture industry, you got to see a definite pattern of control, a definite pattern of school, and how much it influences America, because in a short time since motion pictures have proliferated, they've been able to make what we consider, or what is considered now normal, what was no longer considered normal, was sin. Fornication now is very normal. Taking the name of Jesus, very normal. And so it just basically normalized our resistance to sin. And so this is where we come at. Now, when I came on this idea of the motion picture industry when I studied it, I could have gone on two aspects, on the idea of the supernatural nature of the motion picture industry, because in the motion picture industry, what we have is we have various individuals who in doing their movies, they take their training in drama classes, or they do this. And when you study Greek culture, one of the aspects of the motion picture industry is, or drama rather, is that in Greek culture, drama, they would invoke what we call the muse. Now remember, the muse was, in Greek culture, was the idea that if you were an actor, you would invoke the muse, and as the scripture says, all the devils, all the gods of the Gentiles are devils, but the Lord made the heavens. So when they would invoke the muse, what they were in essence doing is that they were invoking devils to speak through them. And so when they would give a play on their mythological gods, Zeus or Mercury or Jupiter or the various gods that they had at that time, many times, as because of invoking the muse, in once it sounded like the gods were speaking through them, because all of a sudden they sort of kicked into this, like, and people looking at them would say, wow, they're speaking like the gods. The god is speaking through them. Zeus is speaking through them, or the other Mercury or whoever it be, the Venus is speaking through them. And so when you got to see the idea of the supernatural character of movies, that there's no way you could just say, when I began to study this, that it was simply talent. You got to see this continuous pattern that it was no longer just talent, but the supernatural at work. And when you got to see this idea of Keanu Reeves, he made the movie The Matrix and a couple other movies, he has admitted in public, in magazines, that he takes demon rides, that he rides in the sense that he doesn't even know sometimes what he's said or what he's done. Many people, like when I talk to younger people, I talk about Denzel Washington when he was, or when he does his acting. He made a movie called Malcolm X a few years ago. And on that set in Malcolm X, they had various biographers of Malcolm X, because people that write his biography were very well acquainted with his speeches and whatever he did during the time of the civil rights. If you don't know Malcolm X, he was a civil rights activist. He was Muslim, and he wanted to sort of organize the blacks under the Muslim community, and eventually he was assassinated and killed. But what Malcolm X, Denzel Washington did was he played the character or the person of Malcolm X. And so his biographers were there at the movie scene, and his biographers, like I said, were very well acquainted with his speeches, the way he gave talk. And so Denzel Washington was also a great invoker. He would invoke the muse. And as he was doing, they have the script, and the actors read the script, and obviously they try to memorize it. He all of a sudden started giving a speech that was written by Malcolm X, that wasn't on the script, that he never had memorized. And the director and everybody's looking at him going like, where'd he get that one from? You know, it's not even on the script, because you already have enough things to read. And it was a verbatim speech by Malcolm X coming down that was not from him. It was from another world. He had invoked the muse, and the muse had taken over, and he was writing in every essence the devil. So a lot of these individuals, when we talk about the supernatural in the movies, you start seeing this pattern of how the movies are made, who makes the movies, and how we're influenced as Catholics by the movies. Because remember, our theme is, and she kept all these things, and Mary kept all these things in her heart, how it influences that. Now, one of the movies that has come out very recently is the movie Twilight. And the reason I know Twilight, because I don't watch it, but I walked into a Catholic home, and in the Catholic home, they were telling me about their rooms, and I said, they had a poster of Twilight. And I go, hey, isn't that like about vampires and things like that? He says, oh yeah, it's a real good movie. It's about this vampire who holds back his passions to bite this girl. I think it was the girl's name Bella, and the vampire's name Edward. And so they wanted to hold back. And so the movie was how he was able to control his passions, especially the passion of wanting to taste her blood. And he was so heroic because he actually held back. And what people said, well, this is an example how we should hold back from giving in to our passions of lust and everything. And Edward was the exemplar of this. But when you started to go deeper into the movie of the Twilight, you got to see a different picture. And I, this is from this author, Stephanie Meyer. She was the one that wrote The Twilight. She says, very few people are aware of the shocking truth that both Stephanie Meyer, who authored The Twilight Saga, and J.K. Rowling, who authored the Harry Potter series, appeared to have channeled their novels as evil spirit directed them. Like Rowling, Meyer has set her sights on the vulnerable youth. The Wall Street Journal reported Twilight has targeted the collective soul of teenage America and will surely have its way. Meyer claims that she was compelled to write Twilight after the story was first communicated to her in a dream of June of 2003. Meyer admitted, I woke up on that June 2nd from a very vivid dream. In my dream, two people were having an intense conversation in the meadow in the woods. One of these people was just your average girl. The other person was fantastically beautiful, sparkly, and a vampire. They were discussing the difficulties inherent in the fact that they were falling in love with each other, while B, the vampire, was particularly attracted to her scent of blood and was having a difficult time restraining himself from killing her immediately. I typed out as much as I could remember, calling the characters he and she, and this is from her own website, Stephanie Meyer. This dream was so significant that the Twilight Saga that Meyer produced a transcript of her dream in chapter 13 of her book, Twilight, entitled Confessions. Meyer claims that sometime after she received the revelatory dream, she heard incessant voices in her head that wouldn't stop until she would type. Bella and Edward, the vampire, were quite literally voices in my head. They simply wouldn't shut up. I'd stay up as late as I could trying to get all the stuff in my mind typed out and then crawl exhausted into bed, only to have another conversation start in my head. So you got to see the idea that being herself a Mormon, and those of you that when you qualify the Mormon religion, it is a religion based on polytheism because of the fact that all Mormons have the potential to be gods. This earth, according to the Mormon teaching, is the fact that it's run by a god. One of the Mormons that eventually matured to be a god, and that's why the Mormons have lots of children, because they want to produce lots of gods to take over lots of planets. So from the onset, their religion is already anti-Christ, because they believe in many gods, because they don't acknowledge Christ as the only true God, and they consider themselves as God. So when you think about that, that's an aspect of this idea of the religion. So furiously did Meyer's dark occult story pour forth that she said at times, I couldn't type fast enough. She finished the dark tale, though it was her first book, in just 3 months. Meyer also has also said, I'm greatly looking forward to finally having Twilight on the shelves, and more than a little frightened too. Overall, it's been a true labor of love. Love for Edward and Bella and all the rest of my imaginary friends. I am thrilled that other people get to meet them now. Meyer also stated that the characters in Twilight were so real to me that I wanted people to know them. Sadly, if the truth was known that Twilight fans were aware of the dark and malignant nature of the real forces between the Twilight Saga, they would run, not walk, to the nearest exit. It appears as though the spirit entity appearing as Edward to Meyer in her dreams and communicating to her when she was conscious revealed more about the true nature than Meyer had bargained for, because many times in writing these movie books, they have to channel whatever the spirit obviously is giving to them. And so you see this continuous pattern that, whether it be in the Harry Potter books, whether it be in the Twilight books, whether it be in the Matrix written by the Wachowski brothers, whether you got to see this continuous pattern of the supernatural involved with use of acting, with the use of writing. And then it was a very powerful force, not only for the government, because remember, as our Holy Father said, it is a school. You learn from that school because of the fact that you're in a very comfortable environment. You're paying attention to the screen, and the music is made to either lift us up or bring us down, have a mood of sadness or happiness. And so everything is entitled to teach us something. It is not simply any longer an entertainment. Now, I remember some of the individuals came to me when I was giving the class in the schools, and they said, well, does that mean that every time I have a dream that that is channeling? Obviously not, because sometimes you could have a very vivid dream, but it's a different situation than when you have a dream that is forcing you to write, and until you write, you can't feel any peace. You just have these twitchy fingers, and you got to do something and type on the thing. So we have a different situation of persons who maybe perhaps have a bad dream or maybe had some nightmares, and someone that is impelled to write their dreams and make sure they write everything that is in them. So this is a very important aspect. Now, when we're talking about this idea of the movies, and this ties in with the, and Mary keep all these things in her heart, one of the books that I came up with, and I don't know why it took me so long, was the book by St. Louis de Montfort. And St. Louis de Montfort, his book is called The Love of Eternal Wisdom. And I, in 20 years of religious life, I never read it till this year. I don't know why it took so long to read it. But, and it ties up especially with this idea of the love of eternal wisdom, was that in the book by St. Louis de Montfort, he mentions that in wisdom is the knowledge that of in regards to God, of the knowledge he has of himself. God knows himself perfectly and relishes the love of himself because he is the most perfect object or person or being that can ever be. We, when we partake of wisdom, we get also that grace of wisdom to relish the things of God. And I'll take this from the book. This is from that the novena on the gifts of the Holy Ghost, and this is what it says about wisdom. Wisdom enlightens the mind to discern and relish things divine, in the appreciation of which earthly joys lose their savor, while the cross of Christ yields a divine sweetness, according to the words of the Savior, take up thy cross and follow me, for my yoke is sweet and my burden light. So we see the idea of wisdom is to relish the things of God. But when you come to the point of, like St. Paul reminds us, that if we are in putting into our minds things of lust, lying, fornication, evil, all kinds of things that we allow ourselves and we allow our children to watch, then there is no room, obviously, to relish the things of God, because we have filled our minds and our hearts with the spirit of the wisdom of the world. Because St. Louis de Montfort, what he mentions to us is there is this, the wisdom of God, which is, and St. Paul says this in Romans, for the wisdom of the flesh is death, but the wisdom of the spirit is life and peace. And it goes on, because the wisdom of the flesh is enemy to God, is not subject to the law of God. But then St. James tells us, but the wisdom that is from above, which is God's wisdom, is first indeed is chaste, then peaceable, modest, easy to be persuaded, consenting to the good, full of mercy, good fruits, without judging and dissimulation. So as a person watches a motion picture, or even for the most part, even the news, because many times I'll have a lot of, as a pastor, I'll have a lot of individuals say, well, what's wrong with the news? I got to watch the news and know what's going on. And I'm not knocking it. I'm just telling you this past week I had to go to Olathe, Colorado. And in Colorado, everyone likes the Denver Broncos. So there are Colorado's people. You like the Denver Broncos. They watched it. So we were watching the last part of the Denver Broncos, and they think they beat Denver, the Dallas Cowboys. And so everybody was happy in the house. So everyone was very cheerful. So we thought, okay, the game's over, and let's watch the news. So we watched the news, and the news was having a little scene about, oh, in Colorado, that because of all the forests and the trees, there's a great increase of marijuana growers in Colorado, and there's these little patches of marijuana growing throughout Colorado, and the government was making sure they eradicated. Then the next section of the news was, and this is where it came for, we couldn't find the remote, but the next part of the news was finally in Olathe, Colorado, they were going to build a strip club. And the man who was the owner, the proprietor of the property says, aha, look, we get to have the first strip club west of the Rockies. And naturally, since the news is no longer news, but rather a show, a school, that they we were like this, and then all of a sudden these girls in skipping clothes come out to dig the hole, and we go, I can't watch it. And just I turned around, and the guy says, I don't know where the remote is, and I go, well, I'm not going to watch it. So you can't even watch the news without being influenced by the wisdom of the world. Everywhere you go, whether it be in our society, we're bombarded continually with the spirit of the world, the wisdom of the world. And you watch the ads, you go to hear the radio. It's a continuous bombardment of this spirit of the world. And St. Louis de Montfort tells us in that book, The Love of Eternal Wisdom, that the earthly wisdom spoken by St. James is an excessive striving for earthly goods. So we have the spirit wisdom of the world is in earthly goods. He reminds us that the sensual wisdom is a lustful desire for pleasure, and that the devilish wisdom consists in an unlawful striving for human esteem and honors. We want to put ourselves above others. And so in this world, like St. Louis tells us, that we have to strive after divine wisdom. But if a person is addicted to whether it be R-rated movies or pornography, when is there ever going to be room in their hearts for the divine wisdom? They'll never, ever want to seek God, because they'll be such a slave to the sins of the flesh, or seeing sins of the flesh, or enjoying the sins of the flesh, that they will never have a room for God in their hearts to seek after the divine wisdom. Now, the divine wisdom, obviously, is the knowledge of God. We grow in that knowledge of God. And as we grow in the knowledge of God, we get to rouse the things of God. We love to come to Mass. We love to do those things. But a person who is attached to the things of this world loves not that, who is attached to the wisdom of the world. And so why it's very important for us as Catholics to put away anything that influences towards that side of the wisdom of the world. St. Paul in Corinthians chapter 1 says, for the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, I will catch the wise in their own craftiness. So we see that idea of wisdom, and that was one thing that got to me when I was listening, I would pray the fifth joyful mystery of the rosary. And all the years that we've done the de Montfort rosary, St. Louis de Montfort always says in the fifth decade, praying for true wisdom. And I'm like, I didn't understand what he meant until I read the book, The Love of Eternal Wisdom. And the idea of wisdom is to seek for God, and not to ever tire of seeking for God. But if we are full of the wisdom of the world, we will never ever strive to seek for God, because we are putting a block to the seeking of God, to the enjoyment of the things of God, and we put ourselves obviously ahead of that. And then on this, to end this talk and on this regard, I read a little quote from Blessed Henry Suso. He says to us, may our mind and our memory become a handbook of Mary's sorrow. So when St. Louis de Montfort mentions that when we pray the rosary, and in light of the idea of praying for Our Lady of Fatima, asking her to convert sinners, to convert us, to make ourselves consecrated to God, very important for us, the idea that he says the Holy Rosary is a very good way to attach ourselves to obtaining the divine wisdom of God and putting away the wisdom of the world. So in this idea of the Motion Picture Association of America, the movies, how they have influenced us, what I tell the people and my people in Phoenix is, you know, I'm not a policeman. I don't go to your house and check your TVs or anything. But it is ultimately you who allow or have your children watch things, and you have to take the blame if they learn any words, any actions. That blame is yours exclusively. because of the fact that you allowed them. You can't say, well, my kids will bug me till I watch it, and or they will nag me until I allow me to go to the theater. Whatever you yourself have allowed, you yourself as a parent will be culpable to God for. So in this regard, we want to take the teaching of Pope Pius XII that we are very careful about what school we allow our children to go to and how we can protect their purity so that they strive after the true wisdom of God. They got closed down by the Motion Picture Association. They were made an agreement with the motion picture industry to sell all their DVDs, so they had a clearance sale. You could buy all their clean films. They sold out a few years ago. They closed all their editing and they closed down everything. They have no website, nothing. They're not allowed to any way censor films. Nobody's doing that. No, and then no one's allowed to do that any now, because I think most of the other Mormons, who at least the Mormons who did that clean films, know that they're going to get taken to court real quickly. The motion picture industry has all the money from Walt Disney, Columbia, Paramount, 20th Century Fox, Universal, Warner Brothers, MGM, and Sony. So they got plenty of dough to take you to court or to sue you. The question is, let me repeat it as best I can. You're asking, is it okay to watch TV if you're be able to fast forward it? Is that what you're saying? They what you're saying is you're just trying to fast forward it. Well, I mean, you're just going to probably be doing that probably 100 times a movie, so I don't know if you try to catch the words that are being said, like blank, blank, mute, I mean, it doesn't work too well before you know you're deep into the scene, and they do it so fast that the scene comes on and it's engraved in your mind, and that's it. You never are going to be the same after watching the movie. Even like The Passion of the Christ, those people that watched The Passion of the Christ, they were never the same after they watched it, because they saw the great sufferings of our Lord, or the movie Saint Therese. They saw the great holiness of this saint, and they were never the same. So even just a millisecond of some impure scene can affect a person with temptations and things. So I just I'm going to always strive to encourage my people, not at least in Phoenix, my parishioners, not to allow the children to go things like that. And now with this, like I said, with the clean films taken out, you don't have any choice. You just got to watch whatever the studios do. And then I think that's probably been the main downfall of our country, was that the influence of the motion picture industry in regards to fashion, regards to the use of the supernatural, Harry Potter movies. They've basically able to water down any resistance that people had to witchcraft or vampires. And people might say, well, that's just like, you know, Dracula and all the things, but it gets a little deeper as you go into it more. I did not get into the subliminal because of the fact that it requires a little bit more studies. And these things that they talk about here are just blatant words and gratuitous fornication and all kinds of other things. So I figured that was enough evil. What movies? She's asking the question. I'm going to ask the question. She's asking about subliminal. Is subliminal part of my topic here? And it's not. I just went into what is open and able to be seen by all and heard by all.